Who are you?
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, presented by Zata Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston.
Right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
I'm going to serve up. That's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that. He hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free stay.
This is Late Hits. Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. On the John P. Listener line, on the text line, on Twitter at pcreighton1. Aaron Raybould on the other side of the glass, mass controls at Aaron is blitzed at ESPN 97.5. And, of course, on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN975. And it's Friday. It's Ask Us Anything Friday. It's Friday. Thank you, baby Jesus. There's a lot of things we say about Friday, all of which are always good. Nobody ever has anything bad to say about Friday. Friday's always a wonderful day. The week is over. People get paid. Get ready for the weekend. Going out. Having a good time. Friday is always the best day. So I was out and about today. And, you know, just trying to get some things done before coming to work. And I ran into someone who happened to be in the mortgage business. Now, I worked in a mortgage business for 20 years. So somehow we wound up talking, and person had asked me, oh, well, because I was wearing my Late Hits mask, says, oh, you worked in the mortgage business. You work for ESPN now? And I said, yeah, now I work for ESPN 975. She says, oh, when did you get out? And I said, I basically got out after everything crashed. Oh, and she's talking about, well, who did you work for? And I said, well, you know, I worked for Argent. I worked for Countrywide. I worked for First Magnus. And she goes, well, I heard good things about Countrywide. What was it like at Countrywide? I said, well, I did all right. I made a good amount of money working at Countrywide. You know, I worked in the specialty lending division. So we did stuff that other banks couldn't do. It was fun. And she's like, oh, well, you know, my bank doesn't pay that well. Do you think you could help me get a job at Countrywide? I was like, well, they got bought out by Bank of America in January of 2008, so I'm going to say probably can't. And that was the part that struck me. How are you in the mortgage business and don't know that Countrywide no longer exists? That'd be like, you know, covering a football team and not knowing that there are no more Houston Oilers. Not knowing the Rams do not play in St. Louis. Just it struck me. If you've ever been in that, regardless of what industry you work in, if you work in a business that, you know, like a company has either famously gone down in flames or been totally bought out or something like that, you know, I would bet everybody who works in energy knows Enron doesn't exist anymore. It just struck me as odd, and afterwards I laughed. Probably shouldn't have, but I did. You need to find things to laugh about sometimes, because really, there hasn't been a whole lot of fun stuff, a lot of stuff to enjoy this week in Houston sports. It's been a lot of, you know, bag on the Texans, bag on the Rockets. Even the Astros, we've had mixed results. You know, we're happy that they got Lance McCullers done. Unhappy they haven't gotten Carlos Correa done. So it's been a lot of negativity here this week. And well, we saw some things in the NFL that I guess you could look at it from a certain point of view and say are positive. And that would be that teams are positively moving themselves off of Deshaun Watson. Couple of deals made today involving the Miami Dolphins, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the San Francisco 49ers, as they basically, you know, play draft pick roulette with each other, swapping picks all over the place. Pretty much tell you that those three teams are probably moving on from the idea of pulling off a mega trade for a quarterback. Now, put that on top of the Patriots being rumored to be out. Corey Davis, after he signed with the Jets, when he talked to the media, said the Jets had told him Sam Darnold's going to be the quarterback, at least for this year, so that would indicate the Jets would be out. Well, today, the Niners move up to the number three spot in the draft in a deal with the Dolphins. The Dolphins get back the 12 pick, and then they also get a first and a third in 2022 and a first in 2023. Then after they do that, then they make a deal with the Eagles to move up where they pick up Philly's 6 pick and send them the 12. There was also some later round picks exchanged as well. I think they gave up pick number 123. And a 2022 first to Philly in exchange for the 6th pick and then the 156. So like the number 12, a 4th rounder, and a 2022 first in exchange for number 6 and a 5th rounder. So that would make it look pretty solid that the Dolphins are going to have Tua Tagovailoa as their quarterback this year. That the Eagles are going to give Jalen Hurts a chance to be the quarterback this year. And that San Francisco is either going to go with Jimmy Garoppolo or they're going to draft a quarterback at 3. Because why move up to 3 if you're not trying to get a quarterback because you're afraid they're all going to get taken before you get to pick at 12? That 3rd pick is costing them 3 ones. So, unless they think, you know, Kyle Pitts is the next Tony Gonzalez, it would seem that they might draft a quarterback at 3 and then either let that guy sit a year behind Jimmy for a year and then move on, or maybe they move on from Jimmy before the draft and they get more picks, but they get some of that draft capital back. But either way, the Dolphins, the Eagles, and the Niners all appear to be moving on from the idea of being able to swing a blockbuster deal for a quarterback like Deshaun Watson as he continues to face all of these accusations and all of these lawsuits. They're not charges, they're lawsuits. But this is now where, you know, we'd seen all the reports that said, oh, well, teams aren't necessarily deterred from trading for Deshaun Watson. Now they've pretty much announced they're deterred. Of all the original teams that were supposedly linked to being interested in Deshaun Watson, the only ones that we haven't 100% heard from doing something that would completely take them out of the mix would be the Bears and the Panthers. And the Panthers redid Christian McCaffrey's contract, so if they were to trade him in a deal for Deshaun, they would get whaled on dead cap. And the Bears don't really have a great pick this year. You know, and if you were to trade Deshaun to the Bears, well, the Bears are going to win double-digit games, and then it's really not going to be a good pick in any of those future years. But today was the day where pretty much the NFL announced they're all moving on from the idea of some kind of monster quarterback trade. And whether it be Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson, the giant QB trade appears to be off the books for any of the potential suitors that have been covered over the last 2 months. So the idea of, you know, if you're the Texans, and you know, we had talked about this on the show for the last couple of weeks, if you're the Texans, do these lawsuits make you want to go, hey, you know what? I know we haven't wanted to trade them. Maybe we should reconsider. Well, that's out the door. And isn't it convenient that the day before all these deals go down, you know, we get the shenanigans story of, well, the Texans, were definitely going to trade him. No, they weren't definitely going to trade him. They were only going to trade him if everything failed in trying to work it out. It was their, basically, it was their eject button. It was, everything has failed, the ship is lost, fine, eject. There's still a month before they were even going to consider that option. You know, this idea of, the Texans, they were definitely going to trade them, but now that the lawsuits are there, now they can't. Well, it's true, now they can't. But the idea that they were going to trade him, but the lawsuits derailed everything, that's a crock. Because they weren't returning phone calls. They weren't listening to deals. No, they even made fun of this. That, you know, one of my buddies in New York told me last week, is like, hey, they're saying that, you know, for the Jets, they'd want three firsts and Quentin Williams and this guy and that. I'm like, well, how could the Texans have asked for that when it's widely reported they haven't returned anybody's call? Like I said, I spoke to several people in and around the organization on Tuesday of last week during the day, so before Tony Busby dropped the lawsuit thing, which nobody in the organization knew was coming. That every single one of them said the organization's plan is to make it work with Deshaun. And if, you know, they get to the point where they're close to the draft and there's no hope, then it was, well, try to get the most you can get for them. But for the next month, it was, can we work it out with Deshaun? Can we get Deshaun to just talk to us, to come to the table, to, you know, to change his mind? Can we get him to come to his senses and just at least have discussions with us? Let's try to work it out. And now the shoe is completely on the other foot, as now it's Deshaun who has to work everything out. He's got to work it out in the courtroom, and then he's got to work it out with the league. So the Texans, at this point, they don't even have to work. What are they going to do with Deshaun? Right now, they're not going to do a damn thing with him. Right now, there's no reason to think that Deshaun's going to be in camp, and if he is, you know, what are the chances? He's either suspended or on the exempt list. If there's criminal charges, he's probably going to be on the exempt list. And if there aren't criminal charges and any of these lawsuits have any kind of a resolution between now and, say, August, well, that might be enough for Roger Goodell to hit him for six games. Texans aren't going to know what's going to happen until the league makes a decision, and it's way too early for the league to make any decision. So if Deshaun wants to stay in isolation, now it's not really on the Texans to make nicey nice. Because Deshaun's got too many other problems. How close are we to getting the dirty details? I'll tell you next.
That.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You are listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Patrick Creighton.
You know, Tony Busby, you know, one of the things we talked about last week when Tony Busby first dropped the first lawsuit on Deshaun Watson and told us that there were going to be three more, which has been added 12 more on since then, is the fact that it's not the first time Tony Busby's been involved in a lawsuit that involved a Houston Texan. Because back in 2013, he represented Mario Williams' former fiance when, after Williams and the girl broke up, he was looking for a return of an engagement ring he bought her worth nearly $800,000. And just for those of you out there thinking about the concept of spending $800,000 on an engagement ring, you know, like a house on a ring, don't do it. Bad idea. Absolutely, under no circumstances is it a good idea to put an $800,000 rock on anyone's finger. Not hers, not yours. Bad decision. But Tony Busby represented Mario Williams' former fiance. And what he did was he hired a digital forensic expert to go dig up some 1,800 text messages between her phone and Mario Williams' phone. They parsed through all these messages and they carefully selected the ones that they felt made Mario Williams look the worst. And guess what happened to those ones? Yeah, they conveniently became public. Now, he used these text messages to ultimately get a settlement out of Mario Williams to probably get a six-figure settlement out of him to give his client and pocket some money for himself, of course. So the idea that we could be seeing text messages, because Busby has said that the messages between Watson and these women would show how he was going on Instagram, soliciting them, scheduling with them, and then like making apologies later on, and apparently there's some other details in there which he claims are going to come out. That might be the next step in this case. Because so far, even though Busby always says it's not about the money, he's clearly acted like it's absolutely about the money. And, you know, Tony Busby, rich dude, likes having rich things. Well, they don't pay for themselves. He's not taking this case pro bono. So you know he's looking for a huge settlement. So here are some things that we learned. Apparently, with all the like digital tools that people have at their disposal, if they're a forensic expert, they can retrieve like all your text messages, all your social media messages, even stuff that you deleted months ago. They can retrieve all this stuff, and they don't even need your phone to do it. So if you sent it to, you know, Susie Homewrecker, if they have her phone, they can still get all the messages you sent her. They don't need your phone. So one of the things that we learned is if you are having a disagreement with anyone, never freaking text. Don't text. Don't send messages over social media. That stuff is forever. And while all of these alleged massage specialists from Instagram who don't have licenses have accused Deshaun of, you know, touching them with his, you know what, or some other kind of misconduct after he reached out to them on the gram, they're going to look for financials. They're going to look for some kind of settlement. And it's not lost on any of them. Deshaun just signed a 4-year, $156 million extension. One of the suits says that Deshaun was texting this one particular woman just relentlessly, blowing up her phone. And Busby has promised he's going to provide multiple text messages. Important to keep in mind that this is Busby who's going to leak them, so they're all going to be slanted to his favor. But we're probably going to get to see the ugly or some ideas of, you know, text messages that seem to make Deshaun look in a bad light. This is going to happen. But then there was something else that came out today that I thought was very interesting. Daniel Wallach, who actually co-hosts the Conduct Detrimental podcast with our buddy Dan Lust, found out that Tony Busby is actually being sued for defamation by a doctor in El Paso. Busby has been running ads in English newspapers, in Spanish newspapers, and on Facebook, looking for parents of children that were either injured or died after being treated by this specific doctor. And basically says, hey, you might have a case. Call us. Call us right now. And he ran them like all over the place. And they're kind of sketchy. Like there's a picture in one ad. There's a picture of a guy dressed up like a doctor with like an I don't know what the hell I'm doing face. There's another picture of a guy dressed up like a doctor. He's got his hands on his head like he's got no idea what he's doing. So they really went out of their way to make this, you know, that's not even the doctor. These are just pictures. But apparently the guy sued. And a court ruled that these commercial solicitations are not protected under First Amendment. So this guy is suing Busby for defamation because he's basically doing a really shady way of trying to drum up extra clients to make it look like an avalanche of people against this doctor. Playbook. It's exactly what he's doing to Deshaun. Thought it was very interesting. UFC 260 is tomorrow. We talk with our buddy Kel Dansby from ESPN Ringside and the Corner Podcast next.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, joining us right now on the HRMP Hotline from ESPN Ringside, the longtime host of the Corner Podcast on all things combat sports. Longtime friend of the program, my buddy Kel Dansby. What's up, Kel? How you doing, man?
It's good. I'm doing great. Looking forward to some good fights this weekend. I'm in Vegas soaking up the sun. I cannot complain.
What is Vegas like right now? I mean, like, how close is Vegas right now to what Vegas used to be?
It's not what Vegas used to be, right? But it's getting back to somewhat normalcy. So I'm trying to stay away from the Strip as much as possible. But we just had spring break out here last week, and you wouldn't know the difference. So it was packed in Vegas. The fights are still at the apex. But this looks like it's the last hurrah for the apex here for the UFC. They're taking their show on the road. And by the summertime, we should have fights back here in Vegas.
Well, Kelly, UFC 260 tomorrow, huge heavyweight title fight. You know, for the first time in 3 years, Stipe Miocic's going to fight somebody not named Daniel Cormier. And in those 3 years, you know, Francis Ngannou, his last four fights, he has beaten some good, big-name fighters in under 71 seconds. All four times. How different a fighter is Francis Ngannou today than the guy who fought Stipe Miocic a little over 3 years ago?
Honestly, we don't know. And that's the scariest part, right? What Stipe was able to do to Francis is say, I'm going to be cautious for the first two rounds, stay in your chest so you don't have those lengthy, wailing throws that are going to knock me out. And in the final three, we'll open up and you're going to be gassed out and tired. It worked. And he was able to control Francis on the ground. Since then, no one has been able to take Francis, like you said, deeper than 70 seconds. For over 2 years, he has a total of 2 minutes and 47 seconds of octagon time in four wins. So if Stipe theoretically lasts more than 3 minutes, he has a pretty good shot in this fight. It's just, can you last that long against Francis Ngannou? He stepped on the scales today, same weight as the previous fight, but looks shredded. His whole body has changed. It's been a transformation. Can he get up from the ground? Can he stop a takedown if he gets to that? We thought that was going to be answered in the Blades fight. Blades shot for the takedown, caught an uppercut, and it was good night. So we still haven't seen Francis on his back. We don't know what's going to happen if that becomes the case on Saturday night, but this seems like the best version of Francis Ngannou that we'll ever see. If he can't get it done on Saturday night, sadly, he might go down as one of those people who are one of the best to never hold a championship in the UFC.
You know, in a lot of fighters' careers, sometimes there's that one pivotal moment. There's this one linchpin fight that changes the direction of their career permanently. If Francis Ngannou is victorious tomorrow night, do we look back at that July 2018 fight with Derek Lewis, the one that we all thought was just going to be haymaker after haymaker, and it was like the two biggest dudes playing patty cake with each other? It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Do we go back to that fight and say that is the day Francis Ngannou completely changed his outlook, his determination. Like, that fight changed his career.
Yeah, I think that fight had a lot to do with it. I think that was the first time where you realized, listen, everyone loves me unless I'm delivering the knockout, or until I'm not delivering knockouts, right? So he felt all this love. He was the darling of the heavyweight division. People, again, back then, were was comparing him to the Tyson of MMA. He looked mediocre in that fight, and a lot of the fans, a lot of the noise quieted down. He had a lot of time to himself. He had to figure out who Francis Ngannou was. So now the hype is building back up, and then now it's not getting to him. He knows that this is all dependent on what happens on Saturday. And I think he doesn't want to let that go. People aren't going to be there no matter what for him. He understands the importance of winning these fights, bringing his best on every night, not having an off night going into the octagon. That Derek Lewis fight showed a lot to Francis Ngannou. And we've seen that. We've seen it since. He hasn't been wasting time in the octagon. He has a clear plan, goes in there, gets it done.
Talking with Kel Dansby, ESPN Ringside, host of the Corner Podcast, with us on the HRMP guest line. Now, Kel, you know, Stipe Miocic, the guy who, you know, on ESPN, they were trying to do the Mount Rushmore of MMA heavyweight, like MMA heavyweights Mount Rushmore, and he's on it. And you know, he's 20-3. The only fight he's lost since 2014 was the first of the three against Daniel Cormier. Now, he's only fought Daniel Cormier for the last 3 years. Does that make a difference when you go into the ring and you've only trained for the same dude for 3 years? When you go back into the octagon and it's like, all right, now I got to train for a different guy, even though it's a guy he's seen before, but you've trained for the same dude for 3 years. Is it hard to change up?
No, I feel like training for Daniel Cormier, like if you're training, let's say, for Francis Ngannou for 3 years, yeah, maybe it'd be hard to change up. Cormier was the hardest puzzle to figure out at heavyweight because his wrestling skills was better than anyone else. You had to go into a fight and realize, I cannot get out-wrestled, out-muscled by this man. Oh, and by the way, his hands are still good enough to knock me out because he did that once already. He was the most complete fighter in the heavyweight division. That's why Cormier is also on the Mount Rushmore list. I was one of 13 people who voted for that. They both made my list. So Cormier was the toughest puzzle to figure out. You had to train everything. That's why going against Francis Ngannou, you don't have to worry about wrestling. You don't have to worry about jiu-jitsu. You don't have to worry about Muay Thai moves. You don't have to worry about low kicks. Shout out to Conor McGregor. You don't have to worry about any of that. You have to worry about his right hand and his left hand. So it's a much easier puzzle to figure out. So I think even though Cormier is the only guy that we've seen go against the champ, Stipe Miocic, in recent years, he was the toughest guy to prepare for. Stipe has an easier game plan this time. Don't get knocked out. That's the only part of the game plan. Don't get knocked out. If you don't get knocked out, you win the fight.
Well, Kel, you mentioned you voted on that ESPN panel, and you voted for Stipe. You voted for Daniel Cormier. Who were the other two guys you voted for?
I had Fedor, and unlike everyone else on the list, I believe I had Krokop as my fourth. I didn't go for Doom, even though he has big wins. Obviously, I think he also has big lows in the division. He kind of fell off of the cliff. And then everyone else puts Cain Velasquez in there. He's the other person who made the list. And to me, Cain had a ton of potential. He could have been the greatest of all time. He had a great run. It just wasn't long enough. Injuries kept him out for too long. To me, Krokop gets the spot over Cain Velasquez.
Kel, the other big fight on this card, Tyron Woodley looks to get back in the win column against Vicente Luque. And Woodley actually a dog in this fight. Now, Woodley has lost three straight fights. In his last fight with Colby Covington, he suffered a rib injury that ultimately ended the fight. Is his job on the line tomorrow night?
Yes, yes, it is. He's a hot skip and a jump away from being Bellator bound, right? We've seen the UFC recently cut a lot of veterans. We've seen the likes of Anderson Silva be cut. We've seen Yoel Romero, who was just challenging for a title, be cut. A lot of these contracts are structured in the UFC that you get paid for your longevity. If you're not in the title hunt, title picture, top four, I don't think they can justify it paying these 14, 15-year veterans anymore. So Woodley has to win and show that he's still in that echelon. It's from now until you crack the top three of the division, every fight is win or go home. If he's getting paid way too much to be mediocre, if that's what he's going to be. If my heart says hopefully Woodley wins this, honestly, I don't think he is. I think something about that Usman fight wasn't right. He's been gun-shy ever since. And when it goes, it goes. I don't think he can pull the trigger anymore. I don't think we're going to see that big right hand that floored Robbie Lawler. I think those days are over.
Now, for Luque, four of his last six fights have either been fight of the night or performance of the night. That being said, he's won 8 of 9. But out of those 8 wins, I don't know that any of the names are as big as Stephen Thompson, Wonderboy, who he lost to in November of 2019. Is the name value of Woodley, even though maybe he's not the same fighter anymore, is the name value of Woodley bigger than most of the guys that Luque has beaten so far?
Definitely. Anytime you can add a previous champion to your resume, you take that opportunity. It doesn't matter where they are in their career. We've seen that with Jose Aldo on lower levels, right? Like, people have went into championship fights off the strength of beating Jose Aldo when he was on a 3-fight losing streak. So if you can add a former champion to your resume, it'll do wonders. This is what UFC does. UFC, they have these rankings. We do rankings at ESPN. All these people have these rankings. The rankings don't matter. It's what the fans think. It's who can make the most money. And if you beat former champions, the fans will recognize that more than beating the guy one spot ahead of you or a contender. So, yeah, you rack up these names on your resume, and sometimes you jump guys who have had 10-fight winning streaks against average competition.
Kel Dansby, ESPN Ringside, host of the Corner Podcast, with us here on the HRMP guest line. Kill his last one here before we let you go. You know, Colby Covington is, kind of rebirthed his persona as this, you know, guy who doesn't care about anything or anyone, says all kinds of, like, real crazy, wild, often offensive stuff, and apparently at it again. When asked why he didn't want to take a short notice fight against Leon Edwards, made a very crude comment about sleeping with another UFC female fighter. That fighter has since, I guess, basically denied that that happened. But is there a point in time where you get a guy like Covington who consistently says things like this, where the other fighters hold him accountable? Because it seems like UFC has no interest in holding him accountable when he says things like this about female fighters.
They're not going to hold him accountable unless he loses. At this point, combat sports is combat sports. And to suggest that it is anything otherwise would kind of be blind for us as fans, as media members. Yes, it's on a bigger platform now. The UFC is on ESPN. It's all this stuff, it's more mainstream, if you want to consider it that. But at its core, it is what it is. It's fighting. And if you win, and if you're better than the next person, you get away with these antics, unfortunately. The only way to do it is how Usman did it. Went in there, broke his jaw, and shut him up for about 3 weeks. His jaw was unwired, and he kept talking. So until other people can do the same, I think Colby Covington has noticed this gimmick works, and it makes him money. And I'm not sure without this, he would have been a tenth of the star that he is now, for better or worse. So we're not going to see it ramp down by any means. They're going to ramp up. This guy is going to take it to new levels. Because if you don't win, if you don't fight, you got to do more craziness outside of the cage to stay relevant. So we're going to see this until the guy gets a fight and gets humbled again.
So the heel persona has been, has literally been everything for him.
Changed his life. He could have been unknown and broke, or he could be hated and paid. We know what he chose.
Not for nothing, brother. I think I'd have chosen the same thing.
Can't knock it, man. Can't knock it. The bank account is smiling at us. No one else is. His bank account is smiling.
You can always apologize later on when you're retired and very rich.
Yep. Shout out to Joe Trump.
Kel Dansby, ESPN Ringside, The Corner Podcast, with us here on the HRMP guest line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kel Dansby. Kel, great catching up with you again, brother. We'll have to do this again soon.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Kel Dansby, ESPN Ringside, here with us, breaking down UFC 260 tomorrow night. Tell you what I'm going to be watching. All right, how much is your freedom worth to you when you're a player and you want to escape a bad situation? What's next?
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5,
presented by Dr. Ben Salento and Texas Sinus and Snoring, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Patrick Creighton.
Hey, let me tell you about my good friend Dr. Ben Salento, Texas Sinus and Snoring. You know, for over 20 years, I didn't sleep at night. I'd roll around, keep waking up, stop breathing, start breathing, snored like a chainsaw. But I never really slept. I never got good rest. I'd get these sinus infections every other month, and I'd be constantly on antibiotics. That was the extent of it. Here's your antibiotics. Okay, we'll see you when you need them again. I met Dr. Ben a little over a year and a half ago, and he was the first doctor that actually wanted to know, hey, why do you keep getting these sinus infections? Let's find out what's going on inside your head. So I had gone up to see Dr. Ben. He's got a state-of-the-art facility up in North Houston. We went three doors down. They did a CT scan on me. A couple minutes later, they got the results up on the board. Doc explains what's going on in English so you know what's going on. He doesn't use all that medical terminology that, you know, has you looking at him like Scooby-Doo. Going, like, you actually understand. He explains it so that everybody understands what's going on. So we put a plan together. And ultimately, my plan involved having a procedure, which is done right there in his office. No need to, you know, get a referral or another doctor or anything like that. Does it right there in the office. They had removed staph infection from my sinus. They did a balloon sinuplasty to fix all the damaged tissues in my sinuses from years and years of just constant infection. And they did a septoplasty to fix my deviated septum. I didn't even know I had a deviated septum. And ever since I had the procedure, from that day forward, I have being able to breathe better, I've been able to sleep better. I have not had a sinus infection. I've not even had a sinus headache. I don't snore anymore. I know this because Doc had me download an app on my phone that listens to me while I sleep at night and records how loud or how soft I get. And it shows you where you're snoring when you cross a certain line. I don't snore anymore. I don't have sleep apnea anymore because my airways aren't blocked. I'm not stopping breathing. I sleep through the night. I feel good when I wake up. I feel rested and energized. If you sleep at night, but you don't really sleep at night, you know, you don't feel rest, you feel tired because, you know, you're rolling over, the side of your head gets all congested, then you roll back over, your side of your head's congested, you got to wake up, start over again. You have snoring, you have sleep apnea, you wear that big old CPAP machine. Maybe you can't sleep with the big old CPAP machine. You're just dealing with sleep apnea without actually treating it. You need to have a consultation with Dr. Ben Salento. So stop what you're doing and write this down. Open up your smartphone. Open up the notepad on there and punch this number in. 346-413-9313. 346-413-9313. or go to TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Schedule a consultation with Dr. Ben. It changed my life. It'll change your life too. Outpatient procedure. You're down for a couple of days. You could, you know, have the procedure on Friday and probably be back to work by Tuesday. It'll change your life. Don't mess around with it. Go see Dr. Ben Salento, 346-413-9313, TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Tell him I sent you by. Real quick, before we get into what's going on with the Rockets, apparently Mick Cronin, who's the basketball coach at UCLA, has issue with the NBA and the G League because they wound up signing a guy that he had recruited, and then ultimately they lost that recruit to the G League. So Dyche and Nix wound up going pro and playing in the NBA G League Ignite. That's the part of the G League for guys who aren't technically draft eligible yet. And he went and complained, and he did it on ESPN National Radio. He went and complained that he was told, well, you know, you don't know if UCLA is going to play or not. You don't know if that's going to happen because there was a time where the Pac-12 had shut down all sports. So it's not like they lied. But he was really angry, and he went on this rail on ESPN radio about how, you know, they don't care about us, and all they wanted to do was fill a need for a point guard. Well, you know what, Mick? If you guys didn't take advantage of every college athlete that, you know, has ever walked through your doors, the G League Ignite wouldn't exist. Yeah, you know, how much money do you make to coach these kids who don't get paid? You sell their jerseys, but they don't make anything on it. You can go sign all the autographs you want and get paid. They can't. They can't even get a part-time job because it violates their scholarships. You could do whatever the hell you want. The idea of, oh, the G League stole them from us by telling them that we might not play, or maybe by offering to pay him. You know, there's a lot of kids who come out of high school, their families don't have means. And isn't that the whole reason why, you know, the Adidas scandal with the sneakers and the payouts, all that happened because kids are getting paid to go to this school or that school? A lot of these kids, they come from places they don't have means. And if they're able to legally go get paid, because God forbid the NCAA do that, then you know what? Too bad on you. Find some rich kids. Go to UCLA. Kids that aren't, you know, living nine people in a two-bedroom house. Maybe a kid who's not, you know, family doesn't struggle to make money. But man, to sit there and bitch about it, you just come off as such an entitled jackass. The NCAA, there's nothing the NCAA does that probably doesn't aggravate the hell out of. Here's Mick Cronin giving us another example of why the NCAA is looked at as such a clown show and crook. All right, we'll get into the Rockets and how much is your freedom worth to you next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!